from New York. I'm from New York. The president is from New York. We had dinner last night. I sat next to the first lady.
It's Thursday, July 27th, 2017. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. This is Kev Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. And each week I talk to our Capitol muckraker in chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly at state and national politics. On this week's show, Mitch McConnell gives healthcare destruction one more shot. Now it's the skinny bill. Protests erupt in Senate chamber with chants of kill the bill, don't kill us. And of course, Capitol Police arrest protesters while attempting to block journalists from covering the arrests. Looks like the crackdown on protesters and journalists continues. New White House Communication Director Anthony Bada Bing Scaramucci bringing mob discipline to the White House. You got a freaking problem with that? Justice Department responds and announces crackdown on leakers. Democrats offer better deal but can't seem to shake Clinton-era corporate Democrats speak in making their case. Yawning messaging shows fear of growing progressive power. Well, there are some important policy initiatives nonetheless that we'll take a little peek at. New Bloomberg poll shows that Donald Trump is more popular than Hillary Clinton. Yes, you heard that right. And Michael Moore takes Broadway starting tomorrow night, Friday the 28th. In Pennsylvania, a judge temporarily halts construction of the Mariner East 2 pipeline after Sunoco pipeline found in violation of several environmental regulations and at least 14 household wells were contaminated. Governor Wolf, our carbon-loving friend, allows a special interest-backed long wall mining bill to become law. Educational Management Consultant Group, NCHEMS, releases full report on Pashi's future. Not much new, but things will begin to heat up as Chancellor prepares to depart. See ya! And the new academic year is set to begin. Allentown Mayor Ed Pawlowski indicted as part of a federal corruption probe. He joins the mayor, his fellow mayor out there in Reading. Pawlowski now faces more than 50 counts, including extortion, bribery, and fraud. In this federal corruption case, the federal prosecutor basically likened what was going on in Allentown as selling City Hall to the highest bidder. As early as today, PA Senate to consider House Bill 59 to restrict access to Medicaid. And PA Senate is prepared to vote on a revenue package. What? Yes, a revenue package for the budget. You remember that shell of the budget that they passed a while back? Well, and guess what? It looks like a severance tax is included. In space news, well, kind of space news, Star Trek Discovery makes a splash at Comic-Con, and I am so freaking psyched! GOP Representative Dana Rohrabacher asked NASA scientists if an ancient civilization existed on Mars. Because fiction? I don't know. NASA April Fool's joke spurs the deep conspiracy web about secret Martian base. And Sean preps for a wedding. Grimace does wedding. Free Will Brewing has a can release today at 3 p.m. Cloudy with a chance of charcuterie. I can never say that. Charcuterie. There you go. And that's a New England style IPA in four packs of 16-ounce cans. That's at 3 p.m. at both locations of Free Will Brewing. As a reminder to tune in to the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. I'm not going to be there this week for the Resistance Report. We'll pick that up next week. But you can stream the show live at freespeech.org, or you can tune in on Dish Network, DirecTV, or with the Free Speech TV app on Roku. You missed the show, can't make it Saturday at 7 p.m., no problem. Get on over to thericksmithshow.com and click on the Free Speech TV icon in the sidebar, and you can watch it at your leisure. We need you, folks, to keep pulling no punches, progressive media going strong. Become a member of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to RagingChickenPress.org and look for the support and membership tab. Click Become a Member and you're on your way. Not ready to become a member? No problem. You can make a one-time donation by clicking Donate. And look, we need you. The progressive community, the left, we need you to help us deepen Pull No Punches progressive media that will hold power accountable. And this is a reminder, we are reaching the end of our latest promotion. Recall, if you become a member for as little as or for as $15 a month, at the $15 a month level, we will send you a copy of Naomi Klein's new book, No Is Not Enough. We've been featuring that on our webpage. We've been talking about it on the podcast because it is a book that we should all be reading. So go to support and membership tab at RagingChickenPress.org. Click down, become a member at the $15 a month level, and we will send you Naomi Klein's new book right away. At the end, that expires. This offer expires at the end of July. But no worries. We're going to have some additional offers coming up soon. I'm working on actually getting a special. Well, actually, I'm going to save it until next week. I'm going to see if I can track down a really cool giveaway for members coming in at kind of one of the upper levels for next week. But I'll fill you on that soon. I'll look for a Facebook Live on that one. So just so you all know, we're having a little technical stuff again this week. This week, Sean is in the remote location. He is actually practically a stone's throw away from me right now as he prepares for the wedding. So his audio is going to be a little unusual, but we'll do our best to make it sound good, just like we have in the past when I've been off gallivanting around the around the Northeast and so on. So, Sean, welcome from like underwater, man.
Can you hear me now?
Exactly.
Exactly. Well, I felt like a fish in a fishbowl last night when I was out celebrating my brother's sort of like us going out to dinner instead of having like a full-blown bachelor party. We went down to South Philly and went to a Mexican place and sat there for a few hours drinking margaritas and eating tacos. And, you know, it was me, my brother, my dad, a friend of ours, and then the fiance's dad and her sister's boyfriend.
Nice.
So we had a nice time out.
Good. Is he excited for the weekend?
Yeah, he's like in the place where he just wants to let it be and let everything fall into place at this time.
Yeah. He's kind of like turn it over to the onslaught of history. You know, just let's keep it going now. Well, cool. That's awesome. So, you know, once again, we've got another crazy week. So this week, it's been dominated once again by Mitch McConnell's last ditch attempt to move forward on the healthcare bill to try to get something passed that they can say they did something about. There's some interesting takes on all that in terms of what McConnell is actually after here. There's those folks who kind of want to dismiss, the attempt to pass this skinny healthcare bill or to have debate on it. As basically, you know, Republicans just say, okay, we just need to vote on something. And there's other folks that, you know, basically say, no, this is McConnell's slow, methodical way of trying to force a more substantial repeal vote down the way. I'm not sure what's your take on all this, man.
I don't really know what to think. It's kind of like interesting the way they're doing it. The bill, I was flipping through the channels yesterday and Fox News was on. Shepard Smith, who's been like pretty critical of this, had a really good point. It's like, listen, you know, we're going to vote on a bill that's been crafted in total secrecy. No one knows what's in it. And we're going to try to repeal the healthcare system in this country that will affect the sixth of the economy so that they can get out of DC by Friday at 10 a.m. Like, this is pretty much like what I think his criticisms were like on point, and he just started laughing sarcastically with that. Like, pretty much like this is the way not to govern. Like, if you were to do this, like there's really been no debate about this. And I really don't remember the House Democrats or the Senate Democrats crafting the ACA in total secrecy 6 or 7 years ago.
That was like months of hearings and all that. There hasn't been one single hearing on any version of these bills that are moving forward now. CBO basically scored the latest version, the so-called skinny repeal, which would basically remove the like the medical device tax. It would eliminate the individual and the employer mandate, and there's a couple other provisions in there. They basically said the CBO came back, and I believe the number is, I can check on that later on the show, but I believe the number is it still comes in that about 16 million people will be left without health insurance. So again, no matter how you cut it, no matter how skinny this is, we're still talking about millions of people that are going to be left out in the cold without insurance with whatever repeal it might be. But, you know, what's interesting about this is that they're saying that, you know, if even if they pass the skinny repeal with just those provisions that I just kind of walked through, this gun has to go back to the House, and they have to have basically a committee that has to kind of reconcile the two bills because they're not the same. So when that happens, basically, we could end up with a bill that looks like the House bill. Right. In the end, looks like the House bill, then it would have to go back to both chambers, to the House and the Senate, for an up or down vote. And then that's it. Up or down vote, 50, you know, not subjected to a filibuster. And then that would be where the real pressure would be put on those Republican senators. Are you going to vote for Obamacare, or are you going to vote for this repeal and replace thing? So that's going to be it's going to be really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be fun to watch. That's for sure.
Well, you know, one thing that struck me, Sean, this week was that, you know, when we talked last week, you had just come off, you just got back from D.C. the day before of a series of protests, right? And one of the things that I asked you last week was basically, well, I'm curious about what the protesters thought, because there's people saying, okay, the repeal efforts are dead now and all that kind of stuff. And you were quick to come back and say, well, that's not their take on things. But their take on things, this is not dead. Right. And so while we saw the media and some Democrats, things like say, yeah, you know, it's all dead. Activists on the ground were not convinced. And it turns out they were right. And they were back again this week.
Yeah. Yeah, they were right. They were back. And, you know, watching the vote the other day to open debate, which, you know, John McCain so courageously voted for, you know, he cemented his legacy there, in my opinion. But you could hear
bloviated for a while, like, after righteous king, I come back from the dead to come back and haunt this chamber.
Right? Yeah. But like when they were yelling, kill the bill, don't kill us. That was pretty much their like motto for the week before. And one of the things that like came out of that, which was like really interesting how journalists were reacting, was that like the Capitol Police were clearing out the hallways when that was going on. Right. And when they were clearing out the hallways, they would push everyone off to the sides, the journalists and everything. And the way the demonstrators were preparing for that was, this is standard operating procedure, right? Like they'll clear out the hallways. They'll push you like 50 feet, 60 feet away from what's happening. And so you're not really like up close and watching the arrest happening. A lot of the journalists were surprised because the police were treating that as a crime scene. They're saying, step back from the crime scene. And then also the police were also forcing or yelling at the journalists to delete all their photos that they were taking, which is something that Will Bunch was writing about, you know, like how they're, you know, going after protesters, but also like going after the media in this like authoritarian way to delete record of them getting arrested or delete any records of like this protest happening at all.
Crazy. Yeah. And you know, Will Bunch, you know, part of the point in that piece too, is that, you know, it makes him kind of embarrassed to kind of be where we're at. I mean, this is, you know, on the one hand, we see this gradual, you know, I don't know, assault on really democratic traditions. I mean, I'm looking back, like on the one hand, we see this, not only do we see the kind of like the kettling of protesters and things like this, we see that increasingly being applied to journalists. There was also, you know, the fact that Sean Spicer, well, I mean, he's gone now, Spicy's left. Sean Spicer was basically not allowing cameras any longer in the press briefings, which I believe, in the press briefings, or didn't want things recorded. They're still trying to limit access at the national level. This has happened multiple times locally. I mean, we talked about Senator Soprano. I mean, Senator Wagner, you know, him going after that one reporter. And then here we have these kind of protests in the Capitol. And once again, police shouting out, Capitol Police basically saying, arguing or basically instructing journalists to delete the pictures that they were taking of the arrest. I mean, this is, you know, again, if we were looking at this happening in another country, this would be scary. But I think because it's happening so slowly, people, you know, might not really kind of grapple with the gravity of the situation.
Yeah, and it's been scary watching this for a while because now, like, you know, also journalists are barred from recording senators in the Senate hallways and asking for interviews without their permission, you know, which is something that's sort of like commonplace, especially in the state, in Harrisburg, in the state capitol, where, you know, you have your camera out, here's someone walking outside the door, you know, a few people will have their cameras running asking questions about, like, why was Terzai meeting with Scarnati, or asking Scarnati a question, or asking the Senate staff a question. You know, that's common practice, and it seems like they're trying to criminalize that. Well, they are criminalizing that on a national level in D.C.
Yep, no, that's absolutely right. You know, this is one of the reasons why we keep on coming back to this is because, you know, I mean, obviously it affects both of us directly, but also because if we were going to be able to continue to have, you know, anything that's even resembling a free press or their kind of right to assemble or these kind of things, you have to pay attention to the kind of small developments, because that's usually how this stuff moves forward. Crazy. But, you know, the one good news of the week, though, Sean, was that, you know, the Democrats have come out strong, right, with a new plan, a new bold plan that's going to basically revolutionize our politics, and is going to bring forward a kind of progressive agenda that's going to blow it's like the 1930s out of the water.
It's like the Steel Day, but 2017 instead of 1897 or whatever.
When I was listening to Chuck Schumer, I was reading his op-ed in the New York Times about their announcement. I thought I was reading Lenin, man, Lenin.
I could feel the class war burning through the pages and the TV screens.
Yeah,
you know,
when they said we are going to stand behind to give you better skills, we're going to give you skills for fewer jobs.
Because, you know, if everyone knows how to code, then no one has to make money coding.
Exactly. Why should Silicon Valley have to pay premium prices or premium wages to coders, right? When you could just flood the market, drive down wages, and basically have a sweatshop right there on the West Coast.
So, like, one of the things that, before we get into this, I was listening to Chapo Trap House on the way down.
Yeah.
And the free episode.
I was mowing my lawn yesterday, so.
So they had a really great conversation with their guest for the week, and he was basically saying, like, if you look at the STEM movement, right, the skills, right, if you look at where the STEM movements are, it's going to, like, all these, like, underserved people, communities where people of color live, and it's, like, it's not because it's, like, to bring them out of, like, poor, like, poverty into prosperity. No, they're doing all this STEM stuff, all this skill stuff, you know, these better skills in these lower neighborhoods, in these bad neighborhoods, so it devalues the profession. You know, the more people you have are skilled in STEMs, the lower the value of that profession is, and it's just a way of, like, turning that into sweatshop labor at that point, pretty much.
No, look, this is the thing. Those of us in education have been saying this kind of stuff for like decades. So just imagine this. This is all you have to need to know. What started happening, like, in the 1970s, 1980s, and things like this, you started having, you know, this, you know, again, push for graduate level education, right? And so then you basically started overproducing PhDs. Right. So instead of it being a smaller market, you started basically flooding the market with PhDs, especially in things like the humanities, without any kind of, idea about, you know, are you going to get a job or not? So, for example, in my field, right, where I teach writing, I'm in the writing field and that kind of stuff. But in the English departments and the humanities and things like this, you had all these, you know, people graduating with PhDs, right, looking for jobs. Right. And you have high competition. So guess what they do? They use that as an opportunity to drive down wages, to create a part-time adjunct labor force, right? Staffed with highly qualified individuals that are put in kind of precarious situations, right? That is the model of capitalism. I mean, it's basically to do the same thing. There's a reason why doctors, at this point at least, doctors and lawyers are able to continue their high salaries that they think. Not because they have some sort of, like, you know, magical powers. It's only because their associations dramatically restrict the number of graduates in the programs, and they keep the cost of those programs extraordinarily high. Right. So basically that restricts the market and you have fewer graduates. And that's the only thing that prevents it. Now, we see some of the stuff again. Obama was at the head of this. Right. On the one hand, giving people more access to healthcare by allowing nurse practitioners and so on to run their own practices and things like that. That's great. But then all you have to do then is flood the market with nurses. Right. And then you can drive down kind of the wages. So the same thing is happening with coding. The same thing is happening in this proposal for the Democrats.
Yeah. And when they say a better deal, to me, that means a less shitty deal that you have. Like that was like my first reaction to it. It's a better deal. Well, it's not as shitty as the deal you have that's right in front of you. So it's better, right? It's better. And, you know, like some of the points, finally, the Democrats endorse a $15 an hour minimum wage, which, you know, Hillary Clinton like sort of was for it and sort of was against it during the campaign. But they go after trust, okay, but like it still doesn't have single payer healthcare, still doesn't have free public higher ed, and doesn't have student loan debt forgiveness.
Right, exactly.
Which are three of the most pressing issues for millennials right now, people of my generation.
Well, and let's not forget climate change, right? Let's not forget
and climate change, yeah, and climate change.
I mean, so we should just be clear. So everybody is on the page. The Democrats on Monday released their kind of so-called, it's called a better deal. This is kind of their new platform or program they're going to be pushing forward. Basically just saying a better deal, better skills, better jobs, better wages, something like this, right? It's messaging that is supposedly targeted towards kind of working class Americans. Although it just sounds like it was crafted in some sort of like, you know,
consultant
back room. Right. I mean, that's exactly what it is. I mean, here's the crazy thing about it. For those of you who are out there, right, who, you know, don't like us talking about Democrats and how the Democrats are effing everything up and how they're not actually kind of moving forward to go with bold programs. Let me just say this.
Have you seen the other side?
Other side of what?
The other side, Trump, and the other side, you know, at least we're not them.
At least we're not them, right? Yeah. Again, Democrats, less shitty. here's the thing that kills me, right? So you get to hear people that say, well, look, I mean, on this program, we've been saying, like, look, the platform should be pretty simple, right? The platform should be universal healthcare, right? Free college tuition. Right. Renewable energy and 50, you know, and kind of, you know, $50 minimum wage minimum. Right.
It's still on debt forgiveness, too.
Or debt forgiveness. Debt
there we go.
Right. These are things that are dramatically, I mean, apparently too popular for the Democratic Party to embrace. Right.
Only 80% of the people in this country support some form of universal income. No, sorry, not universal basic income, universal health care. Like, it's like I've been talking about universal basic income so much that universal basic income and universal healthcare pretty much become interchangeable in my lexicon at this point.
Yeah. I hear that. And like, one, I think, you know, this is something we've been pushing here on the show, right? Basically say universal basic income is something we should take absolutely consider. But, you know, so I left that out of my list just then because, you know, it's not really yet at the kind of catch a fire momentum. Yeah, the discussion. But at the very least, you've got four things, right? Debt forgiveness for student loans, universal health care, free college tuition, right? And a renewable economy, right? I mean, those four things like pull like off the charts, like unheard of levels, right? And the Democrats just can't seem to kind of get behind that.
See the elephant in the room? Like the 400, 500 pound elephant, like standing right in front of them. Gee, Willicker, what's that?
It's unbelievable.
Well, I can't really wrap my mind around it.
Right. And then you start hearing these Democrat apologists basically say, well, you know, there's no way they're actually going to get that. But, okay, I understand that, right?
Okay, but look at this. Fight for 15, right? People have been like, first it was 10-10, then it was like $12, and now the Democrats are on the record saying, no, we want a $15 an hour minimum wage. And what was that from? At least 3 or 4 years of activism coming from your groups like the Socialist Alternative, the DSA, your Fight for 15, you know, your politically left groups that might not be oriented with the Democratic Party, but the leftist groups that have been pushing that. Like, it's, I mean, I think that we're at a turning point when with universal healthcare. Senator Dan Leach is going to be running on that platform, universal healthcare. Right? There was a letter he read was read at Tuesdays with Toomey out in Harrisburg. Jess King running for Congress in Lancaster. She's going to be running on universal healthcare. I mean, these issues, there's going to be Democrats running on this issue in 2018. It's going to be really interesting to see how far they get with it.
I agree. You know, and the Democrats are going to be running on it, but the party has not caught up with with what's actually going to get the goods on the ground. What was most astounding to me, for all those naysayers out there who basically want to talk about practicality and being realistic and things like this, after Schumer had sent out his like blazing op-ed, which, you know, like the kind of thing to grab yourself a coffee just to get through his whatever 300 words. But, you know, one of the things that was blew my mind is that Democrats then were all kind of talking to the media, including Schumer, right? And almost to the individual, right, who are promoting this whole thing, they were sent out to the media to do this. They all said, like, well, look, we know that there's a Republican House, so we're probably not going to be able to get these things. And this is kind of, you know, setting an agenda moving forward because it's going to be a long haul ahead of us. So I'm like, okay, wait a minute. You're telling us it's not realistic for these other things, universal healthcare, all the stuff we just mentioned, right? Because there's a Republican Congress. And then you're saying your little, like, watered down version of corporate speak, Democrat versions of things, is not going to make it through. So your argument you're using against the stuff that's popular,
it's self defeating.
It's unbelievable to me. I'm like, so who are you people talking to? Now that being said, I mean, we should acknowledge there's some really important things that are in there. It's just, this is a question about initiative and about not being afraid of your progressive base. And that's number one. It's like the $15 hour minimum wage thing, basically advocating for that. That's a big deal, right? There's no doubt about that. That's a big deal. It's not enough, but it's a big deal, right? If we actually follow the $15, the fight for 15, then we should say $15 minimum wage and a reform of labor laws that allows workers to organize better, right? That was how it should be put. But okay, I'll give you that. But there was a really good piece David Dayan had, it came out in like the Fiscal Times or something like this, that was calling attention to some important provisions that were in the not in the op-ed that was released. And this is another thing that drives me crazy. Not in the op-ed that was released by the Democrats, but in their white papers for this. And that had basically to do with some of the provisions that they're looking at as reforming kind of like antitrust laws. Right. And this was a big thing. If they can get some of this moved through, some of these reforms given, it would basically say anytime there's going to be any merger between companies or a buyout or things like this, then what has to happen is that you have to take into consideration the impact on workers, right, and consumers, right, and the ability for competition. That's important because you remember the original antitrust stuff that took place, you know, in the 20th century, turn of the 21st century, that had to deal with monopoly power, right? A single company dominating a market, right? The way that a lot of these huge corporations are allowed to kind of grow now is because they're technically not monopolies, right? They've diversified, right? So they're these enormous conglomerates, right? But now we're in this world of Amazon, of Google, of Microsoft, right? That are for all practical purposes, monopolies, right, of these new emergent industries. What they're calling for in this, this kind of opening plank of cracking down on corporate monopolies and the abuse of economic and political power, that's a pretty big deal. What just baffles me is why that is not out in front in terms of their messaging, because that would be the kind of thing that would speak to a lot of people, voters on the ground. So on the one hand, they want words in their actual white papers that show that they're kind of speaking to kind of working class Americans. But guess what? They're not messaging with that. They're messaging with this freaking PR speak.
Yeah. And one of the things, like, I like one of the last points I'd like to say, the setting. Did you actually watch the press conference they had, like the press event, the slap happy press event?
Yeah.
Could they have picked a worse setting and like way of unveiling it? A bunch of old white women with like big round hats on, that like, or old white people in like their Sunday outfits standing in front of like a baseball field. Like, can Was there like a worse setting you could have picked? I don't know. Like the Capitol steps might have been a good place, like a little better place to do this, or I don't know. Go into inner city Baltimore and or like pick like look for a location that like would actually will affect these people. Not like your not speaking to your consultant class. Like have this thing packed with students, packed with people, packed with workers. No, you had a bunch of people in suits and women with like these big Sunday church hats on, and. And look, it was one of the most bland, boring, driest thing you could ever have seen. Like,
it's what they did. They said, "Hey, you know,
like politics is theater. Politics is mostly theater, right? Like, a lot of the politics is theater, and you have to know how to do it. And the Democrats still don't know how to do this.
No. No, exactly. It's like some sort of consultant came forward and say, "Hey, you know what principle we got to use here? We got to use the WWNRD rule." And all the Democrats are like, "What's that? Like, what would Norman Rockwell do?" Right? Calling back to like the ideal kind of white 1950s paintings, right? It's like, "Oh, that'll appeal to people because they're so far freaking removed from everyday Americans, right? What people are going through that they think that actually made sense." It blew my mind.
Yeah.
But, you know, whatever. But, you know, look, there's stuff to work with here. And again, I think that, you know, we'll see. At the same day that was released, there was like these dueling press conferences. You know, Our Revolution, you know, the organization that kind of grew out of Bernie Sanders' campaign was really out there kind of pushing their people's platform, which is basically the Bernie Sanders platform. I'm really calling for the kind of things that we've been talking about on this show. But again, you know, it's going to be an uphill battle. But I like to see that, you know, that you had those competing press conferences. And then at some point, too, we're going to have to really get into that people's platform and see how they're going to, you know, bring the fight to the Democrats on the floor. But pretty crazy. So lots going on, man. So, you know, and again, this week we also had, and we're not going to have time to talk about all this stuff, but, you know, you got Trump out there issuing a ban of transgendered individuals from serving in the military, which, of course, you know, caught fire. You know, first of all, he announces the freaking policy change on Twitter. Hasn't consulted with the Pentagon, even though he says he has. The Pentagon was taken by surprise. They kept on booting journalists back, you know, because Trump people were saying, "Well, go talk to the Defense Department. Go talk to, you know, the Pentagon, because they're the ones, you know." And the Pentagon's like, "You know, we have no idea what the hell this is. Go talk to the White House," you know. So that was
the thing,
nature of things.
The thing about like bartending, where I bartend, there's a Navy depot and there's an Army base within like 20 miles. Like the Navy depot is like 5 miles away from where I'm at. Then there's Fort Indian Gap is like 15 or 20 miles away from where I'm at. And one of the things I never realized until I started working at Pizza Boy was how large the LGBTQ community is within the Army,
yeah,
or within the military. Like, you know, people like the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy made it seem like, oh, there's no gay people allowed in the military. No, there's a lot of gay people in the military. There's also a lot of transgendered people in the military, too. The people don't. People don't realize until you're part of that, not part of that community, but you know, you see that community around all the time, the military community. You know, there's a lot of people in that community who are part of the LGBTQ community.
Absolutely. And so I want to give you an example. I don't know if people have noticed this yet. If you've been at RaisingChickenPress.org, you've seen his stuff now already. We're going to have like a bigger announcement coming forward and with a little bit more fanfare. But Justin Schweitzer he's written for us periodically before. He's had two articles that they posted yesterday. Justin Schweitzer is a student at Kutztown University. He is Raging Chicken Press's first ever student fellow. So we started a student fellowship program, and he's our first ever student fellow. And you know, his work, I just love his stuff. And we had a piece up yesterday, and it's called "Pennsylvania's React to Trump's Transgender Military Ban." And I just want to kind of just take, here's an example. He interviewed a guy at Kutztown University, and this is what he said. So I'm reading here from Justin's piece. So, quote, say, Dante Elia, a Kutztown University graduate and United States Army veteran, voiced his displeasure over the White House decision both as a veteran and as a gay man. Quote, and this is Dante Elia speaking, quote, "Speaking as a gay veteran, LGBTQ plus service members should be a point of pride in democracies such as ours. Denying transgender Americans the opportunity to serve their country denigrates their patriotism, he said. Elijah believed the idea that transgendered people would be disruptive to military operations to be archaic and inappropriate, comparing it to past attempts to avoid racial integration in the military. Just as bad, he said, is the notion that the military would run away from potential distractions rather than to address them directly. Quote, I dispute the claim that transgender members would cause a distraction. That's the same argument that was used by opponents of racially integrating the troops. There are plenty of distractions in the military. Facing them head on is the best way to make them less distracting, Elias said. So, I mean, this just kind of underscores the point you're making there. Would you start actually talking to soldiers, right? And it's not to say that every soldier would agree with this particular take on it, but it's a much more complex issue, than Trump or anybody would like to have us make out to it. And the fact is that even the military was opposed to this. So, here you go, man.
Yeah.
Pretty nuts. So I just got to bring this up because I'm going to love Scaramucci, I got to love the White House new communications director because he's basically going full throttle at Jeff Sessions and the leakers right now, basically saying that, he and Reince Priebus, right? He called out Reince Priebus and say, hey, if Reince doesn't, if he's not a leaker, well, has he come out publicly and proved that he's not a leaker, huh? What's he doing over there, Reince Priebus? What kind of name is Priebus anyways, right? And then he comes out and then he says like this, I swear to God, growing up in Utica, New York, right? Mob town, right? I mean, this is kind of like, this speak, I understand it's right. He's like, look, he's like, I don't know if anything's going to be okay between me and Reince, or however you say the guy's name. I don't know if it's going to be okay or not. Why? Well, because, some brothers, we're like brothers, right? But some brothers, they could get along. They could talk. They could work things out. Other brothers, they're kind of like Cain and Abel. You know what I'm saying? Yes, he said this. Like Cain and Abel. Right? Remember, Cain kills Abel. So, he follows, Reince, why don't you, if you're not a leaker, prove you're not a leaker, right? I mean, this guy is going to be, man, he's going to be theater. Dangerous, but, at least it's going to be theater.
Hey, if Rome's going to burn, damn it, we might as well just watch. We might as well just have some fun watching it burn.
He's got to burn. It's freaking Reince, right? He's got a choice, right? Rome could burn. Or he could prove that he's not a leaker. I don't know. It's like, it's pretty
crazy. So one of the things I found on this list, I guess like one of the last points, you have this on here, more Americans like Trump than Hillary?
Yeah, yes,
I can actually.
man, I just, yep. Right.
So the Democrats are going to find some of the most. The Democrats are going to run one of the most uninspiring candidates to run against someone who probably has dementia, narcissistic personality disorder, and all these other lists of like horrible fucking mental issues, and they're still going to lose in 2020.
Well, I mean, again, this is what the stark choice that facing Democrats are all about, right? This is.
But hey, at least we have a better deal.
Yeah, we got a better deal. We got a less shitty deal. Not so bad. It's not as bad as the worst thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, matter of fact, this Scaramucci guy, right? We like him. He's part of the resistance now. He wants to get rid of Reince Priebus. Yeah, he got rid of somebody. All right, he's part of the resistance. Whatever. But he's like, seriously though. If you look at it, they're looking at approval rating numbers in here. And again, this is a poll. Right. But why the poll matters is not because it is a perfect representation of the truth, but because you can measure these things over time. So Bloomberg has been conducting these polls and kind of tracking, where people stand. And Trump's approval rating of the Bloomberg poll is at 41%. Right. Then when they asked the favorability rating for Hillary Clinton, it was at 39%. Okay. 2 points lower than a freaking insane person. roughshod over our democracy.
It's pretty much like Hillary Clinton is least popular than Nero.
Exactly. And so, I mean, you know, the big takeaway there is, you know, because in my mind, this is not about Hillary, right? In my mind, this is about that whole brand of Democrats, right? And that's really what, and she is like, you know, the person that's standing there with that, you know, a representative of that future. So, you know, again, Democrats can stick their head in the sand and kind of say, well, Bloomberg, it's a business thing, right? It must be because it's conservative, right? Or you can actually deal with the fact that the most popular politician today still remains Bernie Sanders. The most popular policy issues and policy initiatives that are out there are the ones that Bernie Sanders championed in the election. So Democrats, you know, you either freaking get on board or get out of the way. That's really what it's going to come down to.
So. Hey, man, you can't sound like that, okay? That's like Chapo Trap House. You're going to be sounding like a brochalist at some point, okay?
Whatever, man. I'm just speaking the truth, Sean. I'm just trying to speak the truth. Crazy. Speaking of the truth, one of the last thing we'll go up to a break here. I just want to mention this. Michael Moore is basically, he's got a Broadway show now.
Is it called I Told You So?
No, it's called The Terms of My Surrender, right? And it's really interesting. I just saw he was on Colbert last night, night before, something like this. And he was saying that, and Colbert's like, what are you, surrendering? He's like, Michael Moore, basically, no, you missed the actual terms, right? The terms of my surrender. Because frankly, he goes, I'm not going to surrender and I'm not going to live in an America with this guy as president and this kind of thing here. So we're going to fight back. So that was all he would give up in terms of what the terms were. But it's starts tomorrow night, kind of in Broadway. We're going to have a link in the show notes. So anybody's kind of looking for something fun to do, Michael Moore is always a hoot, that's for sure. Anyways, we're coming up to a break. And when we come back, we're going to get into some Pennsylvania stuff. It's a budget moving around, stuff happening there. And we've got yet another carbon-loving move by our governor. So we'll be back right after this. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Talk to you in a minute.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1918. That was the day miners' president Ginger Goodwin was shot dead in British Columbia. His murder sparked Canada's first general strike in Vancouver the following week. Goodwin had arrived in British Columbia 8 years earlier and found work in the Cumberland Mines on Vancouver Island. He considered working conditions in the mines absolutely appalling and began advocating for safety and organizing miners. He was soon blacklisted after participating in a 2-year coal miner strike for recognition on the island. He moved to Trail, British Columbia, where he emerged as a Socialist Party candidate in the 1916 election. He was also elected president of the International Union of Mine, Mill and Smelter Workers, District 6, the vice president of British Columbia's Federation of Labor, and the head of the local Trades and Labor Council. He openly expressed his opposition to Canada's entry into the war, stating that workers were now employed in killing each other. He was found unfit for military duty after a medical exam. That was until he led a strike for the 8-hour day at Consolidated Mining and Smelting. It was the world's largest lead and zinc smelter and a key munitions producer during the war. His status was quickly changed to make him eligible for conscription. He fled to the Cumberland Hills, where he hid out for months to avoid the draft. And on this day, Goodwin was shot dead by a Dominion Police special constable. He was brought back to Cumberland, where thousands turned out for his funeral in a mile-long procession. The Vancouver labor movement was outraged by Goodwin's murder and called a one-day general strike on August 2nd to protest his killing.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. Well, there's lots and lots going on today in Pennsylvania. As I said in the intro, one, we've got some budget moving that's going on, lots of stuff that's happening, however, in kind of the fossil fuel sector stuff. And one of the things that, you know, immediately, you know, Sean brought this to my attention, caught our attention right off the bat was that, you had, you know, Governor Wolf, right? Democratic Governor Tom Wolf, once again, is coming down in a, I don't know what you call it, in a kind of like sorry, not sorry kind of way on the side of, you know, big oil, big coal. Tell us about that, Sean.
So, you know, like there's that saying that whatchamacallit, Karen's been using a lot lately, called climate denial Democrat style. And really, it's a way to describe Governor Wolf. And, you know, this isn't like denialism where he is coming out and saying he's against climate change or climate change doesn't exist or the science isn't there. No, this is denial by his actions not meeting his rhetoric. And last week, Governor Wolf decided to let this bill lapse into law, Senate Bill 642 or 624. And this was a bill specifically to allow Consol Energy to allow longwall mining in Ryerson State Park out in western PA. And a lot of environmental organizations have been demanding a veto on this, and because it would like destroy it would hurt stream quality, right? And this bill was specifically brought up in the Senate by Senator Scarnati to allow Consol Energy to mine in Ryerson State Park out in western PA. And Wolf signed it, or he didn't sign the bill, he allowed the lapse in the law. And one of the things on the assumption that the mining would not cause permanent damage to the waterways that flow above the coal face. So this is like going below the coal, this is below the water table, and going after coal seam. And in my opinion, this is completely inexcusable.
Yeah, if you look at, I mean, longwall mining has resulted in some really, really devastating kind of environmental impacts in the past too as well. If you don't know what longwall mining is, you're basically having these huge kind of automated drillers basically running basically a long wall through coal seams and supposedly leaving almost like pillars left underneath the ground to hold up the land ahead of it. There's been multiple cases, especially out Western Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and so on, where, you know, those support systems have failed, right? And then resulting into like, you know, basically the drop of the land up above, destroying homes and kind of all sorts of environmental devastation that kind of around it there. you know, so not only do you have, and what's crazy about this is that not only are we talking about something that is just going to, you know, add, you know, mad amounts of carbon to the environment, you're talking about something that doesn't even have the jobs payoff, right? Because longwall mining is mostly automated, right, through these huge, huge machines. So this is nothing but extraction for the purposes of corporate profit. That's it.
And this is denialism, right? So after I was like looking up the different definitions of denial, and I think this one is good. It's under Merriam-Webster's psychology. Defense mechanism in which confrontation with a personal problem or with reality is avoided by denying the existence of the problem or reality. And this is pretty much what Governor Corbett or Governor Wolf or Governor Corbett at this point. It's pretty much what Governor Wolf's whole agenda has been with the fossil fuels industry. Last week we talked about his refusal to sign on to the Paris Accords because of his coziness with natural gas. He showed up to a ribbon-cutting ceremony of a new coal mine that opened up in western Pennsylvania, and now he's allowed this bill to lapse into law. I mean, this is something that, you know, we talk about Democrats being afraid of their base, going against their base. This is that right here.
Well, it's not only being afraid of their base and...
This is
said the denial stuff is like not actually grappling with the scientific fact of what this will result in doing.
This is climate denial, right? Like this is plain and simple climate denialism. I mean, like you can't say one thing and allow your actions to do another, right? You can't say, oh, you want to, like, you know, we emit 1% of the world's CO2 and allow this bill to become a law. This is the definition of climate denial.
Yep, look away, right? Instead of actually standing up and saying, no, we're not going to do this, right? Or having to go on the record of supporting it, just kind of like allow it to happen, right?
So there is some ray of hope in this. State Representative Greg Vitale, who lost his chair position as the head of the as the Democratic chair of the Environmental and Resource and Energy Committee earlier this year, because he decided to speak out against his leadership supporting the 24-hour rule change within the House. You know, he decided to make an issue on the House floor on swearing-in day. That really pissed off the leadership, and he lost his chairmanship for that. He promises to challenge this bill in court because he states this constitution, the state constitution, bans special legislation for a particular company in a particular location and violates the Environmental Rights Amendment, which the state Supreme Court recently ruled requires the state to act as a trustee, not as a proprietor of natural resources.
There you have it.
It seems like there will be a legal fight against this to overturn this law.
That's good to hear, man. That's really good to hear.
And a lot of people don't like Vitale. He's supposedly a difficult person to deal with. This not just like rank and file, but like a lot of people in the caucus don't like him because he's just extremely difficult to deal with. But here he is going after the environment is his issue. And he is promising to challenge this in court with a bunch of environmental groups. So there is that.
No, that's good to hear. I mean, look, I mean, at some level, we're not seeing leadership among the Democratic Party in the state. That's for sure. We're not seeing leadership when I'm talking about climate change, right, and kind of renewable forces and stopping the kind of extractivism that is running rampant across the state. The courts are becoming one of the few places that we're actually having any effects. So right now, I mean, same thing. You get this stuff. I'm glad to hear about the fight that's coming about the longwall mining thing. We also just saw a judge just halted like 2 days ago, the drilling on the Mariner East 2 pipeline, right? After, you know, Sunoco pipeline, the builders, the ones who are constructing it, they found that they violated multiple environmental regulations. And there was at least 14 families had their wells polluted as a result of the pipeline drilling already. Right. So this is, you know, let's recall that you've got the apologists who are out there keep on saying that there's no evidence that you're having fracking and, you know, all this other stuff actually results in diminished water quality. Here you have, again, another 14 cases. And as anybody has not been to Dimmick yet, go to Dimmick. Right. You'll see how many houses are sitting there with giant kind of, you know, they call them water buffaloes, these giant kind of water tanks out there because they can't drink the water on their own property, right? Here we go. But, you know, everything has to come with a caveat, of course, because as soon as they said this is going to be halted, the judge also said that, well, the order could be modified. It could be halted if Sunoco submits affidavits explaining why halting drilling would damage equipment, compromise safety, or do more environmental harm than good at the 55 locations along the 350-mile pipeline route where the drilling is taking place during construction. This has come from State Impact, NPR State Impact. So, you know, here you go. So the fight is never over is part of the message. The suspension of the drilling is only through August 7th when there's going to state court that's going to hear arguments from the company and its opponents, right? But this is a huge shout out to, you know, the Clean Air Coalition, Delaware Riverkeepers Network, and Mountain Watershed Association, which basically have led the fight on this and have not given up. And that's the only reason that pipeline construction has halted there.
Yeah. And this is also something that came out last week that staffers within the DEA, middle-level staffers from across the state, particularly in the Philadelphia offices, said that there was going to be an issue with the drilling. This is back in the winter when this was going, before this was happening. And here, now the issue is blowing up.
Yeah, and it's blowing up. It's good. And, you know, again, once again, it's been all about the activism. I mean, it's the same kind of thing. The only reason why the Democratic Party right now embraced a $15 minimum wage is because of the long-standing activism of people on the ground. Just like here, the only thing that is going to stop this kind of extractivism, this runaway climate denialism, is going to be activism on the ground. There's no way around it. So it's crazy. So, Sean, we got news just this morning, right, that it looks like the PA Senate, not to switch topics too quickly, but the PA Senate is actually prepared to vote on a revenue package for the PA budget. If people recall, Governor Wolf allowed, again, the Republican bill, Republican budget, to go forward, right, and become law without any revenue package associated with it. So you've got the House, who's still kind of out of town until September or so, but the Senate is apparently still working on a package, and they've come up with something that it, not only is it a revenue package, but it looks like it's actually going to contain a severance tax. I have no idea about what chance this has in the House, but that is, I guess, a move forward. I don't know if it's a good move forward necessarily. I haven't seen the whole thing.
Yeah, I know there's some controversial issues within the thing. I think there's also a tax on utilities at the point of consumption on the people, but there's also a severance tax in here. I don't know. I haven't been able to read it, but the Senate passed the, so this is what the Senate's out, actually out of session right now. They passed the Health and Human Services Bill 3515, the Administrative Code 3713, Education Code 3416, the Fiscal Code 40-10, and the Tax Revenue Package 26-24. So they are all out until they're all in recess, 6-hour call until the House comes back and passes what they need to pass.
Well, man, we'll see what's going to happen. I mean, it's interesting. What I found was interesting is actually U.S. News and World Report actually has a story up about the Pennsylvania budget, because Pennsylvania, if you recall, is one of these states that is getting national attention right now for basically being in some serious trouble when it comes to budget issues, because Republicans, this kind of the right wing hostage taking of the Republican Party, has led to budgets that are unfunded, and it's just about ways of sending everything crashing down. If you recall, the S&P, Standards and Poor's, was basically saying, look, unless Pennsylvania gets its revenue stuff in order, that we're going to get a credit downgraded again. That matters, because in this revenue package, quote unquote, that is being passed, it's not all in terms of taxes that is going to bring it in. The severance tax is projected to bring in about $100 million a year, but Pennsylvania is facing a $2 billion hole, right? So that you're going to get some increase in taxes, but a good chunk of the revenue is going to be come from borrowing, right? So that you're going to have to borrow money, right? And that matters, especially if the S&P downgrades our credit, because we're not addressing revenue square on. It's basically going to incur more debt as opposed to actually having a fair tax system in the state. So as far as I know, at least looking through what I see here, not going to see a closing of the Delaware loophole, for example, right, which basically would prevent corporations from basically, you know, for all practical purposes being Pennsylvania corporation, but just having a mailbox out there in Delaware to avoid taxes. Basically, this would be what you'd want is something that's called combined reporting that would require them to report all this stuff so you get fair taxes on that. It doesn't look like that's being addressed in here, but, you know, we'll see. Well, the details are going to come forward. But this is, I mean, even if the Senate passes this, this has got to go to the House. And I have no idea what kind of chance it has to deal with in the House, because that's where the crazies are.
Yeah, that's where Terzai's at. And he's running for governor right now, even though he hasn't announced it yet. So,
I mean, can you see this having any legs at all in the House?
Possibly not. I'm not sure. I don't know. The House has to come back and fix this.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, and especially then what's going to happen in the meantime. I mean, do you think about it? We've got a whole month, right? You said what, September 1st or something is when the House comes back.
They're scheduled to come back September 21st.
Oh, the 21st. Oh, that's good. So even more. So you got almost 2 months. Almost exactly 2 months before any of this stuff can get fixed, unless they call some sort of special session or something, I would assume.
Yeah.
This is crazy. Anyways, we'll be back right after this with a little bit of space news, Trekkie indulgence, and beer. This is Kevin Maloney, editor and founder of Radio Chicken. We'll be back right after this.
Took back what you stole from me. Took back. under my feet. Ain't gonna let the system walk all over me. Hey, now he's under my feet.
Hey everybody, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Welcome you back for what should normally be the last call today. But as you saw in the end of that last segment there, our audio started, just went completely off the rails. And so I spent probably about a good portion of an hour trying to deal with all the audio issues that we had today. But that last section was, it was just, you couldn't recover it. So pretty much the whole last segment was just trash. So that was a good portion of my afternoon. Oh, well, what are you going to do? But it's too bad. So a couple things that had to get cut out that I just want to mention now, and then I'm going to cut to it. One of the things that we were talking about that I had to cut out of the last segment that was kind of important was that Monday is a big day. Monday's a big day coming up. That is Monday, July 31st, for no other reason than it is Sean Kitchen's birthday. So I want everybody on July 31st, that Monday, to wish Sean Kitchen a happy birthday. I'd appreciate it. I know he'd appreciate it too as well. Good looking out, Sean. The other things that we talked about today that just did not get recorded right, which is a shame. We talked about the upcoming series, Star Trek, Star Trek Discovery, which is coming out this fall, September 24th, which I'm a huge Trek fan, and that was awesome. We'll have to come back to that. We had a great discussion about some craziness with Dana Rohrabacher asking NASA scientists if ancient civilization actually existed on Mars. That was interesting. And Free Will Brewing later today, 3 p.m. on Thursday the 27th. They are releasing the new cans are coming out. It's a new can release, Cloudy with a Chance of Charcuterie, and that's a New England style IPA at 3 p.m. today. So by the time actually this gets posted, it's going to be time for me to head over to Free Will and pick up some of the cans that they're just releasing now. So again, I'm really sorry that we had such audio issues today. We've got to figure out something better for the future. This one seemed to actually, part of the issue was, we said at the onset, was that Sean didn't have a mic today, so he was actually using his laptop computer for this, but that once everything started getting really garbled, that seemed to be an internet connection issue, because it was seemed to be more on my end than on Sean's end. So thanks for sticking with us, everybody, and we'll talk to you next week. Sean will be back for 1 week before he hits vacation. We'll talk to him next week. We'll see you next week. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We'll talk to you soon, y'all.
See ya!
You're from New York. I'm from New York. The president is from New York. We had dinner last night. I sat next to the first lady.